everybody, welcome to another episode of Movies Mayhem Soap. This is a another quarter century cinema episode. I think this is number three. And I am your host, Chris, and I'm joined again by my brother and frequent guest, Isaac.
Hey.
Former co-host, right? I guess maybe now.
Yeah, I guess so.
Now you're kind of working your way back up. You're the only one who's willing to do this, apparently.
Yeah.
Oscar, I know, had some school obligations. Fabi, I think, just also didn't have really much time to dedicate to the movie. Or to watch the movie. And George is asleep, as always.
I called him Sleepy George.
Sleepy George. Cool. Well, Isaac, what is the last... is there anything you saw recently that you'd like to discuss?
Not exactly. I sent you my picks last night. Or not my picks, but whatever I watched last night. And so it was Stigmata.
Yeah.
Which, I remember when it came out, I mean, there was some interest in it, like, but I remember we finally kind of got around. I saw bits and pieces of it on, like, the premium channels, and it never really caught my interest.
Yeah.
So I kind of let it go. But I remember it was kind of a big deal when it came out. And I guess last year I posted something that that my girlfriend and I at the time had watched End of Days. And holds up, by the way.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
She hated it.
Oh, really?
She hated it, but I still love it.
I saw it pretty recently, like maybe two or three years ago. Yeah, it's still pretty enjoyable.
Yeah. And then someone was like, oh, you like that movie too? Like, I never hear anyone talk about it. They're like, I like that one and Stigmata. And I was like, really? Maybe I should give Stigmata a chance then. And no, it's fucking terrible.
Yeah. Do you generally trust this person's movie preferences?
I mean, not anymore. We're just a very casual social media friend.
Right.
But yeah, Gabriel Byrne's pretty much the only good thing about that movie. Like, you know, he gives a pretty good performance, but everything else in it sucks.
Oh man, not even Patricia Arquette?
No, she's... I don't think she's a particularly great actress.
No, I like her. I find her enjoyable in certain things.
I like her, but I don't know. I just think she's, like, she's kind of monotone, like me.
I guess. Yeah, I guess you're right. She always just kind of sounds the same. But she has charm, for sure.
Yeah.
Not like
I don't. I don't go, oh, Patricia Arquette's in this? Ew.
Yeah.
I just kind of... She's never like, damn, that was a good performance by Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, no, I guess you're right. Well, I guess that one's pretty weird, too. The Escape to Dannemora. She's good in it, but I don't know. It's more Benicio Del Toro and Paul Dano carrying that one. It was good. You should watch it. I think it's... I saw it on Prime with my mom. A lot of sex scenes, so that was awkward.
Oof.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's always rough. Cool. So no, it's a no-go on Stigmata. I never saw it, never really had any intention to see it. Also, you know what, your friend also might have just seen it when it came out. Is your friend the same age as us?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, that's probably it. Because I remember everyone was all like, oh yeah, it's so good and scary and blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, I didn't believe anybody for some reason.
Yeah, no. So I wasn't interested. They would be like that, and I'd be like, yeah, but have you seen End of Days? And they'd be like, no. So, End of Days needs some love.
Yeah, it does.
It's a great... That's all I have to say about it, sorry.
Oh, no, yeah, you're good. I thought you had a little bit more. Yeah, it's I mean, it's not a great movie, End of Days, but it's enjoyable. I really like it. The ending, I kind of have a little... It just seems like they solve everything too easily with the power of what, faith and just having a good heart, I guess. I don't know. It's a little weird, but
okay.
No, it's a little anticlimactic, right? You don't think so?
It wraps up pretty nice, pretty fast, but
yeah,
I'm pretty happy with it.
All right. Okay. Yeah. No problem. It doesn't like ruin the movie for me, but it's just, I don't know. I think it could have had a bigger ending maybe, but I mean, it's fine. So nothing else?
No, I guess that's about it.
Well, I got two for you. Not really ones that I want to say too much about. But so I had, you know, like most people, I had set a goal that all throughout October I would watch a horror movie every month, every day. This is a thing a lot of people do. But I didn't actually start until, I want to say, 15 days in. So I've been, like, really having to watch 2 to 3 movies a day, and it is pretty exhausting. I don't like it. Even when some of them are pretty good, I'm just like, this is just too much. But one of the first ones I did end up watching was Killer Clowns from Outer Space, which I know I've said on this podcast before that, you know, that I was so disappointed with it when I first saw it in high school, that I was just a bummer at like how much I built it up in my mind, like from being a kid and seeing the box, right? And thinking like, oh, this is going to be the scariest shit ever. Like, I don't know if I can handle it. And when we finally saw it, we're just like, this is ridiculous. It's all just corny jokes and being silly and stuff. And so when I re-watched the movie, I was just like, this actually is pretty enjoyable. Like I guess once you sit, you downplay your expectations of how scary it's supposed to be, it you know, it's fun and silly. And the puppetry animatronic stuff, the clown makeup effects are really still really good. It was enjoyable. I was surprised at how much I liked it this time around.
Okay.
I think I initially gave it a 3 out of 5, but then a few days later I went back and edited it to, I think, like a 3.5, because I was just like, yeah, that it's growing on me. Like I can't stop thinking about that movie. So that was pretty awesome. I'm glad I had that experience. On the other hand, yesterday I was texting you about this. I rewatched Vampires, John Carpenter's Vampires, and yeah. I think you're right. Like, because I asked you, like, did we like this when it first came out? And you said, yeah, we thought it was pretty cool. And I think you're right. I think I especially remember James Woods' character being really funny and badass, probably. And no, yeah. this time I was watching, I was just like, fuck no, this movie's terrible. And I was even reading the trivia while I was watching the movie. I was like, give me something to, like, hold my interest in this movie. And I read that John Carpenter wanted to make it because, yeah, he wanted to do a movie where vampires were not like these lonely romantic figures. He wanted to make them like bloodthirsty, savage creatures. And so I thought that was cool. And that he really wanted to do this movie also because it was a Western disguised as a horror movie. And I was like, all right, I can get into that. I still really didn't like it. They initially apparently wanted... So they had Alec Baldwin as... in the Daniel Baldwin role, and after Alec, they wanted Bruce Campbell, which probably would have been better, because it really just feels like, and I'm sure Daniel Baldwin's a fine person, or I don't know if I'm sure about this, but it really just feels like, I'm sure he's his own person, but it kind of just feels like he's trying to do an Alec Baldwin impression through the whole movie, and it's just like, this is odd. It's so weird, but I'm sure he's not.
He was like on a... one of those reality shows like Celebrity Rehab or something. Yeah. He's a mess.
Oh man.
And he called himself the greatest actor of the generation. So.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Did he mean the greatest actor of this generation's brother?
I guess.
Yeah, it's probably.
Right. No, I think. Or greatest actor alive, something like that.
Ugh. Well, no, even his Alec Baldwin impression's not that great. But, yeah, no, it was just an awful movie, and I was really just dreading so much of it. Especially, like, I texted you, the opening sequence is where it just completely lost me. I guess I really didn't give it a chance after that, but they're going into these, like, I guess, abandoned homes or whatever, where these vampires are nesting. And James Woods has a crossbow, and he will shoot an arrow into into a vampire, and then... Daniel Baldwin's outside with the Jeep, and it has a winch on it, or winch, I guess. And then it, like, pulls a cord out, or it pulls a cord that's attached to the arrow, so it drags the vampire out into the sun, because that's, you know, a 100% effective way to kill a vampire, right? But I was just like, this is ridiculous, because every time they want to kill a new vampire, they have to go get the cable back from the Jeep, attach it to another arrow, and then just wait, you know, to drag it out. And he always drags them out so slowly too. They have plenty of time to pull that arrow out of their chest. They never do, though. You better believe they don't. But I was just like, what the fuck is this, man? They need a more efficient way to kill these vampires. These guys. Fucking terrible. And then the movie doesn't get much better from there. James Woods was about 50 when he made this movie, and it's just fucking weird how they're just trying to make him look all sexy and badass. It's so odd, dude. And apparently he improvised a lot of his scenes also. There's all those scenes where he's talking about smoking pole and getting wood. It's probably all just James Woods right there.
Yeah, okay.
It's his gold. Apparently, what did I read on the trivia? That the John Carpenter would always want to do the film, the scene as written first, and then he'd do another take where he let James Woods improvise, and he was glad he did it because James Woods, his ideas were often very genius. That's on the trivia. I don't know if that's a verbatim, if that's a direct quote from John Carpenter, but it's on there. Just fucking ridiculous. I hated this movie, but you know, whatever. Maybe Oscar loves it. I wouldn't doubt it. So those are my two cents. Sometimes it's worth it to revisit movies and just see how much of a fool you were back in the day, either for not liking it or for liking it more than you should have.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know that I'll ever revisit Killer Clowns from Outer Space, but maybe next year, not this year.
Yeah. I'm not saying you would have to, but I'm kind of glad I did. I enjoyed it. Yeah, but sometimes there's a lot of times there's movies where it kind of feels pointless to revisit them. Like how do you really know? You know, like with Halloween, I've always said I really don't like it, and I thought it was boring and it wasn't scary. And then I thought the original 78. Or whatever year it was, 79. I was just like, well, you know, it's regarded as such a classic. Maybe it's something I should rewatch. And then I rewatched it, I think, a year or two ago. And I was like, no, this still sucks. Like, it's still not very good. I don't know. So it's hard. Like, how do you know which ones are the ones that you should give another chance to? I guess you just got to be open to it in your heart.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, regular Halloween... it's considered a classic, not a cult classic. I think cult classics are the ones that you can revisit and maybe change your tune about, like Killer Clowns from Outer Space. Whereas anything that's just regarded as a classic in general, like, it should be good the first time you see it.
Yeah, you're probably right. Because there's a lot of the original, the OGs that I don't like. I don't like Child's Play. I don't like Nightmare on Elm Street. I like probably Friday the 13th more than I think I should, but... whatever, I do like it. Not that it's bad, but just because it's just weird to me that Jason's not even in it. And then, sure, there's like one more big one that I'm just like, nah.
But, I don't think I've ever seen Friday the 13th. But all the others I've seen, and I don't think I didn't like them. I think they were just fine, and I will never watch them again.
Nah, I don't.
And that's pretty much how I felt about Lord of Illusions the first time I saw it. I was like, that's fine. I'll never watch it again. And then I watched it again.
Yeah, for this. Thank you. So today we're talking about Lord of Illusions. It's turning 25 this year. It's from the horror legend Clive Barker. I almost said Clive Owen. What's he up to? I don't know. But yeah. So that's why I was just like, well, we need a horror movie this month. I was fine with doing Mortal Kombat, but then it left Netflix, and like I said, Clive Barker, horror legend, probably not his best movie here, but just figured let's check it out. I didn't want to make Fabi watch Species, or Oscar even. I don't know if his sentiments can handle that type of overload, but
you know. I don't think he can. But. Yeah, I was, when you gave us the option, I was more interested in watching Species just because I remember regarding it as a better, or liking it better anyways. But I was also younger when I saw it.
Yeah.
But then, so when I figured you were leaning more towards Lord of Illusions. So I watched the trailer for both, and then Lord of Illusions did look more like, straight up horror, like let's watch that for Halloween. Whereas Species just kind of looked like a thriller that you can watch anytime.
Right.
So I was like, okay, yeah, Lore Illusion is probably a better choice. And, I think it was, I guess I'll just kind of get into it.
Sure.
Like, I never thought I'd watch it again, but I wasn't upset with watching it or anything. Like, it was actually kind of enjoyable as a Halloween movie, just because, like, yeah, I like to watch horror movies at Halloween, right? Mm-hmm. And so I was like, okay, well, so that would be my recommendation to anyone right now. Like, if you don't know what to watch, you have Prime, and you want to watch a horror movie, like, there you go, Lure Illusions. It's pretty, it's, you know, it's fairly enjoyable. I know you kind of made comments yesterday that you weren't liking it, but I would say.
I just told Fabi that it's probably not, like, it's not a must-see, because she said she didn't know if she would have time to watch it, so I was just like, oh, you're not missing much, but I thought it was perfectly fine. It wasn't, I mean, I have some issues with it, but it was fine. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask, when was the first time you saw it?
It was about 10 years ago. I was house-sitting for our uncle, mm-hmm. and I just stuck around, saw what was on the premium channels. That was, like, the only thing starting soon, and I was like, okay, well, the name sounded familiar, mm-hmm. and I, you know, it was a horror, so I was like, okay, well, I'll check that out, and then, it's fine.
Okay, cool. I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast. I had never seen it. This is my first time watching it, so I don't have the mindset of revisiting it and maybe seeing if it holds up or anything, just seeing if it holds up in time with today's standards, but... I remember when I was little thinking, because I didn't rewatch the trailer or anything, I just kind of went into it with a fresh perspective. But I know that when I was little, I knew it was about, I guess, magic, obviously. But I thought it was gonna be more like a prestige Highlander kind of thing, where it's like dueling magicians and, like, they're fighting for some sort of rank, and they're just trying to, like, destroy each other. That's what I thought it was about. And so even when it started and they show you that Scott Bakula is, he was involved in different occultish cases and stuff, and I thought, oh, man, is this guy going to end up being dabbling in the dark arts also? Is he going to have some sort of powers that he brings to the table? Nah, he's just straight-up detective. Pretty weird. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of a letdown. I thought there was going to be a lot more magic going on, but I guess there was, but not to the level. Like, I thought it was going to be like the prestige, but like a dark arts prestige kind of thing.
Okay.
But I guess we'll go into the plot. There's this guy, Nyx, who is, by all accounts, or by some accounts, a bad dude. He's his apprentice, I believe, is trying to stop him because of he can get into people's heads and really do some damage or something, right? And he kidnaps a little girl.
Yeah. And it's not clear why he kidnaps a little girl. Yeah. Or at least maybe I zoned out.
No, I was about to ask you, do you remember why they kidnapped her?
Nope.
No, I don't know either. I imagine she serves some sort of purpose because at the end they have that same person. Oh, spoiler! They have the same girl, and they're using her as part of the ritual. But I don't know how or why. And so yeah, so Swan and his little ragtag group of defectors, I guess, who used to be I guess part of Nyx's clan, they go and they stop him. They don't kill him for whatever, or I guess for all intents and purposes, they think he's dead. Spoiler: he's not. I don't know why they don't. That part was pretty weird, right?
They shoot him and they bury him.
Yeah,
like I'm pretty sure they thought he was dead. Swan for whatever reason knew he was coming back, or no, they all knew he was coming back.
So why didn't? Because that's the thing. So right. So just shoot him in the head. You know, you have him there. He's dying. Just shoot him in the head. You know. But they put this pretty cool mask on him, actually. I thought that was pretty neat. At the end, also, when they're when they bring him back and he's all deformed and grotesque, like it's pretty cool how he had those holes from the drills still in his face. I thought that was pretty neat. But yeah,
I didn't even make that connection. Like I know he, like I at the end of the makeup, I kept thinking like, why did they design like this? But no, yeah, it's because he had that mask on. That makes sense. Goddamn.
Well, the one in the middle of his forehead or that puckering butthole thing, I don't know if that was part of the mask. But the, for sure, the ones around his face were.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what was up with that butthole. But maybe it was part of the mask and we just didn't really see it. But yeah, that effect was pretty cool. Right away, also when it starts and he's juggling a fireball, I thought that was fucking cool. I thought that was like that was a badass effect.
Yeah, a lot of the effects were really good.
Yeah.
For like that or apparition thing. A lot of the practical effects were good. That origami thing was like CG and it's terrible.
Yeah, that one wasn't very good. All right, I mean, it was fine, I guess, but it wasn't that. There's another one that I thought was way worse that I guess I'll get to when we get to special effects. But enter Scott Bakula. He's a private detective. He just happens to stumble upon a crime scene where Quaid, the guy from Swan's group, is being stabbed to death, I guess, by one of Nix's henchmen and some other new guy, some skinhead guy with sharp teeth. And so that's how Bakula gets into this. No, hold on. No, because the wife hires him, right? Swan's wife hires him.
Yeah.
Seemingly out of the blue, right?
Well, I don't think you have to go this far into the plot. Basically, it's a detective trying to solve the mystery of a magician's death, and then he unravels this the Nix cult thing.
No, but I'm just trying to make sense of it. I guess he's involved before Swan dies because he's there. The wife invites him to see the show.
Yeah. Hold on. Let me try to remember why she. But I think it had something to do with Quaid. Did she know Quaid?
Maybe. She must have. He was there when they saved her. She's the little girl. Which is weird, yeah. Right?
Spoiler.
Yeah, spoiler.
Kind of.
Yeah, I mean, it was kind of a cool moment, I thought, when they revealed it. I was like, oh, she's the little girl. But, what's it called? During the magic show, so how Swan dies is he's got these swords dangling over him while he's, like, pinned down to this spinning wheel. And these swords are just falling, and he's supposed to pick the locks manually, even though he's this magician who can float and do all sorts of crazy shit without the benefit of smoke and mirrors and wires and stuff. But he's manually picking these locks. What was that about?
I think the audience doesn't know that he's really magic, so it's for appearances.
But can they see him? Can they see him picking the locks?
No.
Or at least...
Well, maybe.
I
think all the others, they can figure out that he's picking it.
Maybe. Okay, but let's just say that's still just for show. He's got the little thing for show. He can still probably just bust out of that lock without the pick, right?
Maybe. I don't know how magic works.
Yeah, I don't know either. No, but that's the problem always with magic movies is it's like, well, why don't they just do this thing at this point and just get out of this?
It needs to work. That's a movie rule.
Yeah. It only works when it needs to. Yeah, you're right. But that's always the flaw, right, of magic movies. I just thought that was funny. That he's just there, and he's fumbling with this lock, and he's like, I can't get it loose. And then he dies.
And then I thought it was funny that there was one sword that was apparently, like, in his dick.
Oh, it was. I was like, what the fuck was that? But the one that kills him is the one that falls in his gut for some reason.
Yeah.
There's one in all his limbs, except for one arm. One in his chest, one in his dick. But the final one is the one that hits his gut. Mm-hmm. Yeah, weird. But yeah, I did notice the dick sword also. I was like, what the fuck? So he's involved for whatever reason. And then he goes and he witnesses the death. And he has to figure out who's behind it. And he starts uncovering, he finds the guy who worked for Nix, that weird guy with no eyebrows or bleached eyebrows. Butterfield, there you go. Which I imagine is kind of a play on Renfield, sort of, from popular Dracula lore. He's like Dracula's right hand man, or you know, who's doing all the dirty work while Dracula's asleep. Yeah, I'm gonna make that connection there.
Okay.
And then yeah, he uncovers a plot to resurrect Nyx, and there you go. That's what the movie's about. So we'll go ahead and get into our categories here. Mm-hmm. Oh man, what's my whole spiel? So movies are 50% subjective and 50% objective. So on the objective side, we have a 50-point rating system where we break it down into categories and rate the movie on its merits, I guess, or its social merits. I don't know. I haven't really figured that part out. But yeah, we do our best to try to see if this movie would hold up on today's standards. So all representation categories are 10 points each. And first we'll discuss female representation in Lord of Illusions. What'd you think?
I think it was pretty good, except for the main female, because she's not super fleshed out. Like, she's a little complex,
mm-hmm.
but yeah. At the same time, not really. Like, she's also a little bit one-dimensional. Like,
yeah.
She's just kind of there.
It doesn't seem like she serves much of a purpose.
Yeah. But at the same time, like at the beginning, when you said they had the defectors going to save her, two of them were women, mm-hmm. so that was pretty cool. It wasn't just like a group of men.
Yeah.
And they're, you know, they're wielding guns and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's also a minor character who comes out in two scenes, a homicide detective, a female, and you know she seems to be. She doesn't seem to be incompetent at all, so you know that's pretty good. So I think it's pretty good, except for Famke Janssen. So I think I'll give it.
No, go.
I think
ahead.
I'll give it like a six.
Six? Okay.
Or, no, a seven.
A seven. Yeah. I honestly, now that you're mentioning the homicide detective, I do remember her. At the time, while I was writing this list, I guess I didn't really make any note of her. Famke Janssen, yeah, she's not really doing much. Not that she's, you know, bad in the story or anything. But one thing I wrote here in my notes is that Dorothea, which is her character, she strikes the killing blow on Nyx, and then I wrote nope, because apparently she doesn't. Because what is she goes in and she's the one who shoots Nyx in the butthole, right? His head butthole, and then I was like, oh, that's badass. They gave her the so I thought, okay, cool, she's a hero, which is great because she has that arc where I guess she kind of has to save herself and, you know, get revenge on this guy who keeps kidnapping her, I guess. I thought that was cool, but then no, he comes back to life immediately and Scott Bakula kills him by pushing him into a hole, but he has to float to do it. What the fuck was that?
I don't know.
That was so stupid. I was just like, can you lift me like the car? And yeah. So at some points, Swan lifts a car. At one point, he lifts it telepathically. And Scott Bakula asks him to lift him over to where Nyx is. He like hits him in the head, and then Nyx falls over in the hole. And that's it. That's how you kill him. Because I guess Scott Bakula just had to be the hero.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but the floating, I couldn't wrap my mind around them. Like, why? Why did he have to float?
I guess because he was too high for him to just push him.
No, he was on the ground. Nyx was on the ground, but at the time I thought also like maybe Scott Bakula is just on the other side of the hole, but even then, he could have just gone around him. It's not a big hole, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I guess they just had to use magic one more time. One final trick. Illusion. One final illusion. But yeah, Famke Janssen. And then, yeah, the other characters did have names. The other women in the group. But one of them dies off screen, and the other one just has a scene where she goes crazy and runs into the road. I don't know.
But you know what? Maybe I should. Actually, no. Well, I guess having 3 points less is fine enough, just because they kind of just shoehorn in that romance between Funka and that. Like, that was not needed.
It was not. It just came out of nowhere, very unexpected. I was just like, she just sleeps with this guy. I didn't like it. I don't know. I'm going to give it a 5. I feel like they could have done a lot better. Yeah, there's a pretty noticeable lack, I think, of female characters. I thought. Yeah, I'm going to give it a 5 for female representation. Giving it an average of 6. So for minority representation, what do we got? Where are my notes?
I feel like, okay, Quaid for sure.
Yeah.
And then...
he's barely in it.
Yeah. And then Billy the Magician, who helps Scott Bakula for a little bit of it, I couldn't find his heritage, mm-hmm. but he looks kind of exotic.
Yeah, I thought he was kind of Asian, maybe. or possibly Asian. Not kind of Asian. Possibly Asian. Yeah. But he dressed kind of like a cowboy, which is fine. You can do that kind of stuff. I'm not about... I guess appropriation is a good thing, or it's a bad thing. No, misappropriation is a bad thing. But yeah, if you want to be an Asian cowboy, that's all good. I'm all for it. Whatever.
Yeah.
But I think his name is Billy Hu, right? I think that's what you see on his business card.
Oh, I don't know. I just remember his name was Billy. And then, like, not every character has to be a minority. And right. And these are minor characters that are in it. But at the same time, I feel like it's more than the last two movies we watched then. So yeah. I kind of want to give it a decent score.
Yeah, Billy Hu is his name.
Yeah, Billy. Okay, cool. Yeah, man, I don't know if I want to go with 5 or 6.
Well, yeah, that's another thing also that I was thinking about, that I was just like, well, magic, I'm not saying people of color can't be good at magic, but it's pretty much dominantly a white person interest, I think. That's white people shit right there. No, I guess people of color can be good at it. There are, when Bakula's at the magician's round table, which, by the way, that club is a real club.
Yeah.
I think they had it on an episode of Love also, and I know Paul F. Tompkins has done a thing where he's talked about that he's been there. And that it's not as cool as he had hoped. But
yeah, I'm sure that secret room isn't in there, though.
Maybe it is. I'm sure it has to be in there. I'm not sure that that's what it looks like, or that anyone could just go in and sit at this table. I'm sure there's a lot of hoops you have to jump through before they let you go in there, but I'm sure they have that secret room. Positive.
Okay.
Because I think you can't even go in the club unless... I don't know. They have some sort of restriction.
You have to be like a magician or something.
Yeah, maybe. Something like that. What was my point? Oh, yeah. That It didn't seem inappropriate for it not to have a whole lot of people. But there are people. There's one guy, at least, who's there, who's a person of color. He's a black guy. He didn't say anything, though. There's a freaky-looking dude from Ghost. I think he's Italian, right?
Yeah, but that's not a minority. He's still white. Not?
I'm pretty sure.
No.
I think they are, because, you know, there's slurs against Italians, which I'm guessing that they were a group that white people didn't like either, for whatever reason. Yeah. I don't know. But yeah, there's a woman there at the table also. So I think they tried to kind of be like, there's an assortment of magicians here at this table. But, see, the main three guys are white. Famke Janssen's white. Valentin is kind of dark skinned, right?
Yeah, I guess he could pass for like Hispanic.
Yeah, Quaid gets killed right away, pretty much.
Yeah, he's the third person that's shown to die, but he's the first one that stays dead.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I feel like I wasn't too bothered by it, by the lack of representation. There wasn't a whole lot, which I will give it points off for. I'm gonna give it a 7.
I was leaning towards, I don't know, 5 or 6. I guess a 6.
Cool. Yeah, because the ones that are in there aren't really misrepresented represented either, I didn't think. Yeah, maybe I'll go with 6 also. Just give it a lower point. Just Given a score of 6, average of 6. All right. Any LGBTQ plus representation?
Yes.
I'm pretty sure Butterfield and Valentine were kind of, you know.
I don't know about Valentine.
I think so. I kind of got that vibe from him.
Just because he was kind of a proper gentleman?
Hell yeah.
All right. Butterfield obviously is in that spectrum somewhere.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know where exactly, which one exactly he is.
Oh, man, that opening shot of him, right? Where he's sitting there on the steps, spread eagle, in those tiny little shorts.
Yeah. and he's a major character.
Yeah, he is.
But at the same time, he's not a likable character, so I don't know if that's some kind of commentary or something. Like,
well, no, I would... I didn't think so. I think because Clive Barker is an openly gay man, or I don't know if I didn't know if he was at the time, but I think he kind of wanted to establish a, you know, have a dangerous character also be. So I think Valentina and him kind of were opposing views or not opposing views. So Valentine's a more proper, straight laced guy. And Valentine's this grungy looking dude who is just also a fucking ruthless killer. And he's just like, yeah, the gay people can be all sorts of personalities.
Yeah, okay.
So, yeah, but yeah, like I said, I don't know if he was out at the time, but that would count for me, at least in the what we know now. I feel like that kind of helped me understand those characters a little bit more, so I feel like it helped to know.
Okay, well, yeah, because like I said, like I didn't know if it was some kind of commentary saying like gay people are deviants or anything. So I mean, yes, you have a major character who's obviously again on the LGBTQ spectrum, mm-hmm. and I give it a pretty good score for that.
Yeah.
And
I see where you're going with like the whole Buffalo Bill thing in Silence of the Lambs, where a lot of people felt like it was saying, you know, LGBTQ plus people are evil, you know? But that wasn't the intention of the filmmakers. I'm sorry?
Or dangerous, yeah.
Yeah. It wasn't the intention of them, but a lot of people did pick up on that. But I'm going to go pretty high also. I'm going to go with an 8, only because they don't really... It's inferred, I think. It's more inferred than it is obvious. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I guess.
Like, I think if they had, like, maybe lingered on a caress between Nyx and Butterfield, it would have been a little more obvious, I think.
Well, I mean, again, I feel like it doesn't have to be explicitly said. Right.
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not said, but like I don't know, because I guess because you can't concretely say that he was, but I'm pretty sure he was.
I feel like
he
can, but it's also stereotyping, so I don't know.
Yeah. So what's your score?
I was also leaning towards 8.
8. All right, giving a score of an average of 8. People with health conditions. I want to say the only one was Jennifer. What was her name? Desiderio, the one he visits at the hospital. She has gone mad.
What's PTSD. Going on?
Yeah, PTSD, I believe, and she's having paranoid delusions about Nyx coming back. And I don't know. It's a really short scene. I don't remember. If there's any other people with any sort of condition, physical or mental. Do the zealots count? The cultists.
No, I guess not.
Yeah, no, they probably not. But yeah, that scene, it didn't really seem like it was an accurate representation. But who knows? Like,
well, maybe not now, but like maybe back in the day, like people with PTSD like had to be like put in a hospital or something. Yeah. But like now they're pretty well functioning members of society. But
true.
I guess it was. I don't think it was as well known back then, I guess.
Right.
But still, I don't think this movie is all like, oh yeah, like these poor people. It's just kind of like, oh yeah, this lady went crazy.
Yeah. True. And they don't handle it too poorly. So there's something in there, and it's handled okay. I'm gonna say, I don't know, a 5.
I was gonna give it a 4.
Give it an average of 4.5. Now onto what we know now. Does anything? This is worth 5 points. Anything in this movie affect the way? Anything that you know now affect the way that you might have viewed it? Like I said, for me, knowing that Clive Barker is homosexual kind of, yeah, it helped me understand, or at least I, you know, made that inference about Butterfield and Valentine. And I felt like I enjoyed it more because of, or appreciated them more because of that.
Well, I mean, I didn't know it while I watched it, so I'm not going to count that.
Right, right.
So I would say I didn't know anything about the movie before watching it, so.
Okay.
If I'm unaffected, what do I give it?
You can give it a 5. That it holds up. That nothing affected it. It shouldn't get any points off, I think. But I also want to say that the guy, what's his name, Kevin J. O'Connor, him being in the goofball in those Stephen Summers movies, that kind of didn't sit right with me. Like, he's fine. Sorry, go for it.
Yeah. No, go ahead.
He's fine in this movie, but I just kept like remembering his goofy voice in The Mummy. Now I think maybe no, you know, I think that's really what most people remember him from, is The Mummy. And
so does he bother you in There Will Be Blood?
No, actually, I really like it when he's there, and I was just kind of like, it's weird to me that this is the same guy.
Yeah,
but for some reason in this one, it was bothering me.
Okay.
Also give it a 5.
No, yeah, I was going to say something similar, actually, but a different actor. I think his name, Daniel Von Bargen, as the villain.
Oh, like, Kruger?
I can't see him as other than Kruger. He's been in things, and I just kind of like, oh, man, this is... And, I, you know, he's got a good voice for it, for being a villain, but just seeing him there, I was just like, they could have gotten someone else to do this villain.
That's true. Yeah, he doesn't look menacing. He's got that good voice. You're right. But yeah, I just kept, when I was seeing him, I was just like, I actually had to look in my notes. I wrote down Kruger, but then before I was starting this, I was like, I should know the guy's actual name. So I actually went in and wrote Nyx.
But yeah. So maybe I'll give it a point off for that. It does take you out, and it's not his fault. You
know? No. Not.
But it's just so weird.
Yeah,
being like that's Kruger.
Yeah. Do you want a full point or just like half a point or what?
Yeah, just a full point.
Full point. Down 4. Giving a 4.5 average. All right. Cool. Special effects we were talking about earlier. That fireball one really holds up very well. The mask, the makeup effects at the end. But that origami thing was just kind of meh. Mm-hmm. And then the one that I really, really didn't like was the Swan's face peels off at the end when when Nyx dies, I guess there's like some sort of eruption, explosion or something. And his face starts peeling off down to the bone. That looked awful.
I don't remember.
It felt more like they just were all like, we need something here at the end. Let's just do a quick, I mean, probably practical effects might have been cheaper, but or faster, but they were like, well, you know, we have the technology, let's show something off, let's show off some technology. Maybe the guys who did the origami thing were all like, you know, we can work on something for you if you want, and they just, it felt like they just stuck it in there just to show off. I didn't like that. So special effects is worth 3 points. So it's not too, it won't suffer too greatly, but I'm gonna give it a 1.5.
I'm going to give it 2.5.
2.5.
Yeah, because I would say most of it was really good.
You know what? I don't know if this was... So I think the version that's on Prime is the director's cut. And then I don't know which version you might have seen originally. Well, I guess right now you're basing it off of the director's cut. I think it's the director's cut. I'm not 100% sure. So yeah, maybe they just kind of wedged that in there. Do you remember that face effect?
Nah, I don't. I must have looked away for a moment.
Yeah, it's real quick. But, like, pointless also. Like, I don't know why they had to, like... It was kind of weird also because why did he have to have that fate? It's not like he was a bad dude. We didn't need to see him, like, die. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but that way Dorothy is free to hook up with Scott Bakula.
Yeah, I guess. All right, so for special effects, it gets an average of 2 points. Now, outdated tech or trends. Did we notice anything that kind of, like, really pulled us out of the movie there?
Just the clothes.
2 points. Yeah, even then, I didn't really find it too ridiculous. There wasn't anything, like I said, that was especially distracting. Except for, I don't know if, and I know pretty recently with, like, the whole Chris Angel thing, relatively recently, were magic shows really that big a deal back then? Were they a black tie affair?
Yeah, because David Copperfield was, like, you know, putting on big shows and stuff. But
Siegfried and Roy, too. Mm-hmm. They're a big deal. I guess that's not really a big thing now, is it? You think people are making as big a deal about magic? I felt like they are. I mean,
depends where it's playing and how much the tickets are. Mm. Be like, is it a hoity-toity venue or just like a stadium on the beach thing?
Maybe. Yeah, I felt like it's not as big an event now. So it kind of seems ridiculous to me that they're like, let's go get all tuxed up and watch this magician get stabbed in the dick.
Yeah.
So I'm going to give it, out of 2 points, I'm going to give it 1 point.
Yeah, maybe I'll give it 1-2. Just because, again, the clothes mostly, because this is the same year as Usual Suspects and the other one, watched 12 Monkeys, but the clothes make it look older.
Oh, man. Was there a specific outfit that might have... I know Butterfield was kind of dressing weird, but I think that was more of a character choice.
Yeah. Something what Scott Bakula was wearing at the beginning when he's on the stakeout watching that guy, like that outfit just looked very, very
90s. Oh, man. I don't even remember.
The 90s.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't a horror. That was just, okay, maybe not very, but pretty 90s. And it's not horrible, but just compared to the last two movies we watched, I was like, yeah, it makes it look more dated than those movies.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Cool. We'll go on to body shots. You mentioned that stakeout scene. There's definitely some body shots. You've seen some T and A from both the men and the women. So these are bonus points. It gets 2 points for body shots. And now, finally, the Kevin Bacon, 0 degrees of Kevin Bacon category. Was Kevin Bacon in this movie?
No.
He was not. So it gets 0 out of 3 points, giving Lord of Illusions an overall total of 34 out of 50 points, which is the best one so far of all the ones we've done.
Really?
Yeah. All the Usual Suspects had 21 and 12 Monkeys had 23. Pretty good. Clive Barker. Yeah.
And something I didn't say earlier, kind of when you were recapping the plot or whatever, is that I liked that Scott Bakula's character wasn't like a skeptic detective. He was like totally on board with everything. But at the same time, I felt like the whole backstory that he's dealt with these cases before, that was unnecessary. It could have just been like a dude who's like, okay, this is what's going on. Like, fine.
No, I think it kind of makes more sense that way, that he's dealt with cases like that, and that's why he's just like, all right, I know the deal. I think it would have been a little more far-fetched if he was just a regular Joe Schmo Gumshoe who was just like, these are the cards, and I'm just going to play them as they are.
Yeah, okay. Well, all right.
I wouldn't have believed it as much. I guess you're right. That's probably why they established that. I was kind of... unsure of why they had to establish that background for him, but yeah, that makes sense. That makes perfect sense. Right on, man. By far of the movies that we have done on Quarter Century Cinema, not my favorite, but it's the one that holds up the best, apparently. So pretty good. Good on you. Next month, I don't know, I guess a Christmas movie. But anything you want to say before we go?
Funky Johnson in that red dress. Nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, the pinkish dress, right? Unless I'm thinking of a different one.
Yeah, no, that one.
The pink dress also. She had star quality. And she still does. I still like seeing her in a lot of things. She holds a dear place in my heart. Mm-hmm. All right, Isaac. Cool, man. Well, thank you for doing this again. And hopefully we will see you for the next one also.
Okay.
All right. Bye, everyone. Okay, bye.
This has been a Beak and Claws podcast. For inquiries, email us at beak.claws@gmail.com. That first dot is the dot, not the word. Thanks for listening.